Hello, this is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we welcome you to another episode of The New World Next Week. And we have a lot of massive stories to go over this week, and we're going to get right into it. And our first story really literally hits me where I'm from, and where I'm referring, of course, to the West Virginia mining blast. And as we speak, the rescue operations are ongoing. This took place literally in a county just to the south of where I was born and raised in West Virginia. And we also, if folks may recall, and we'll provide the link for you, back on December 10th, I was actually visiting family in West Virginia, and we discussed the mining and mountaintop removal situation in West Virginia. But the story that I want to cover that really, I feel, shines a light on a number of levels. And what I want to say is that I don't want to look at this or be kind of crass in a way, because myself, of all people, I don't want to take this situation lightly. But something happened the day before this mining blast. This happened on April 4th, which was Easter Sunday. By way of the Huffington Post, Reverend Billy placed holy hex on J.P. Morgan over West Virginia mountaintop removal. A New York City preacher was arrested after placing a holy hex on J.P. Morgan Chase, protesting what he calls J.P. Morgan's financing for mountaintop removal in Appalachia. The Reverend Billy Talon led his Church of Life congregation in an Easter morning protest outside of a bank branch in New York City. Reverend Billy led his Life After Shopping gospel choir to two East Village Chase branches, where the singers deposited mounds of sacred dirt from Coal River Mountain, West Virginia, onto the floors of ATM lobbies. At the branch on St. Mark's Place and 2nd Avenue, the choir performed a mystery channeling of money as bank customers withdrew money, and the reverend-slash-performance artist preached to a crowd through a white megaphone. J.P. Morgan's financing of mountaintop removal, which is the controlled deforestation and detonation of upper parts of mountains to access coal deposits, has been widely criticized by environmental advocates as well as numerous other people. In the past two decades, J.P. Morgan has underwritten 20 huge bond deals to help support the practice, so says and so reported Mother Jones last month. We have a lot of videos and photos and links to revbilly.com. And again, with a story this massive, that this ties in the environmental issues and things near and dear to the people from West Virginia, as well as the bankster situation. And I think it does it with cutting satire, that I believe, you know, in a way, there are some things that satire and comedy can do that hardcore news, in a way, can't or couldn't get away with. James, what's your take on the performance art protests of Reverend Billy?
Well, I think culture jamming is a very important tactic to use to try to monkey wrench the system and try to generate publicity for things. So I am all on board with that tactic and the way that it's sometimes used. But I don't know. Obviously, the situation in the mine now with the 25 people dead, I mean, that's horrific, and nobody wanted to see that happen. So it's pretty unfortunate that happened right after this incident. But the culture jamming itself, I think, is an important and effective tool at times for generating some interest in issues that otherwise won't be covered in the media.
And I think it's something that even, you know, a decade plus ago, that Jella Biafra of the Dead Kennedys would refer to as monkey wrenching the New World Order. So our second story is the other massive story of this last week that, again, in this forum, in this short New World Next Week format, there's no way that we can flesh out all of these stories. We like to give you the basics, and we give you the text and the context and the subtext, and hope that the listeners and the audience will do the research for themselves. WikiLeaks releases video of civilians killed by U.S. in Baghdad. This comes from the website that was set up by WikiLeaks, and of course, Monday, April 5th, they gave a presentation at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., and instead of, I guess, putting all of this information on the already embattled WikiLeaks.org, they set up a brand new site that contains the video, the transcripts, the photos, the PDFs, all laid out for you. So reading from collateralmurder.com, WikiLeaks has released a classified U.S. military video depicting the indiscriminate slaying of over a dozen people in the Iraqi suburb of New Baghdad, including two Reuters news staff. Reuters had been trying to obtain the video through Freedom of Information Act requests without success since the time of the attack in 2007. The video, shot from an Apache helicopter gun sight, clearly shows the unprovoked slaying of a wounded Reuters employee and his rescuers. Two young children involved in the rescue were also seriously wounded. The military did not reveal how the Reuters staff were killed and stated that they didn't know how the children were injured. After demands by Reuters, the incident was investigated by the U.S. military, and they concluded that the actions of the soldiers were in accordance with the law of armed conflict and according to its own rules of engagement. So consequently, WikiLeaks.org released the classified rules of engagement for 2006, 7, and 8, revealing these rules before, during, and after the killings. This release was highly anticipated, and I, James, you and I were talking off mic before we started that I wondered if this story was either going to be massive or completely covered up, and fortunately, I believe it's gone super viral, massive, and the question has been asked, is this the future of journalism?
That's a very good question. I guess that remains to be seen. Certainly, this is a huge story, and the way that it broke and the way that it was led into it, it's very interesting in the way that they've positioned this as sort of a PR campaign. And with a lead in and follow up is extremely interesting. I'm just watching the way that WikiLeaks is handling this and the way they're doing it. But as for the video itself, I must admit I haven't brought myself to watch it all. I have a lot of trouble watching this type of video. But I think it was Glenn Greenwald on the Dylan Radigan show who said that it's the duty of every person who helped to fund this war, which is to say every American who pays taxes, to watch the video and see what it is that you're funding with your taxes. So I appreciate that that point of view, but for me personally, it's really difficult to watch this type of video.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, all you know, more, like we were just saying, more information than you even would really want to dive into is all documented and available on collateralmurder.com. So for our third and final story, it's a controversial one. FCC loses net neutrality battle against Comcast, and the court says FCC had no right to sanction Comcast for peer-to-peer blocking. Reading from the Washington Post, Comcast on Tuesday won its federal lawsuit against the Federal Communications Commission in a ruling that undermines the agency's ability to regulate internet service providers, just as it unrolls a sweeping broadband agenda, which is a whole other can of worms. The decision also sparks pressing questions on how the agency will respond, with public interest groups advocating that the FCC attempt to move those services into a regulatory regime clearly under the agency's control. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, in a 3-0 decision, ruled that the FCC lacked the authority to require Comcast, the nation's biggest broadband service provider, to treat all internet traffic equally on its network. That decision, based on a 2008 ruling under former FCC Chairman Kevin Martin, addresses Comcast's argument that the agency failed to justify exercising jurisdiction when it ruled Comcast violated broadband principles by blocking or slowing peer-to-peer website or BitTorrent. James, we discussed whether or not we would even be able to get into this story on the New World next week, because something that you brought out that makes this such a sticky issue. So actually, if you want to address that quickly.
Right. Well, it just occurs to me that even Ron Paul back in the 2008 presidential election got into a bit of not hot water, but certainly there were people who raised their eyebrows over the fact that even Ron Paul does not support net neutrality, because the idea here is that we can't be in favor of government regulations when it suits us, but be opposed to them at every other time. So in order to be philosophically consistent, people would have to argue that if government regulation is bad, then government regulation of the internet in any way is bad, and therefore net neutrality is an unfair regulation. But to be fair, in 2008, Ron Paul came out and said that he wasn't exactly against net neutrality. It's just that he doesn't favor government regulation as a way of regulating anything, let alone the internet. So it is a sticky issue, and there's lots of different things to think about here. But again, I guess we can leave that for the viewers at home to start thinking about for themselves.
And I think ultimately both this FCC Comcast story as well as the West Virginia mountaintop removal situation shows, and I'll be the first to admit, I don't have all the answers. The more I learn, the more I know that I don't know. And I don't have the answer to the net neutrality situation, nor do I have an idea for the replacement of coal. Wind power isn't going to do it by itself. And I do quickly want to mention that the West Virginia situation I will cover extensively on my upcoming episode 165 of Media Monarchy.
That's right. Well, we are all just looking to try to get as much information as we can, and MediaMonarchy.com is one way to do that. So, James Evan Pilato, thank you very much for joining us once again.
Thank you. Take care.